I'm Marissa Norcross.
And I'm Dave Freund, and this is The Next Page. Hello there, Marissa.
Hi, how are you?
I am terrific, and it's going to sound a little different because I'm in a dorm room.
Mm-hmm.
And our listeners that have listened for, well, since the beginning would know that 1 week out of every year, I go to a church conference in Virginia, and so I don't have my nice soundproof conference room. So it might sound like I'm, you know, in the middle of a bathroom stall or something, but who knows?
But you're not.
I am not.
The important thing is that you're not.
Right. I'm sitting in a dorm room at Eastern Mennonite University.
Oh, that's funny. Sign
on the door that says recording. So hopefully nobody will come in. So, hey, what's it like up in Syracuse?
Well, right now it's actually pleasant, but we are preparing for an extreme heat wave. Ooh. Tomorrow and Saturday. So by the time this podcast comes out, it will be over. But
it will be last Saturday and last Friday.
Yes, but it's I'm trying to figure out what to do here. I've got some house guests right now, and I'm in a wedding this weekend. So we've got a lot going on. And now kind of throwing that oppressive heat into the mix and figuring out what to do. Because I think I've mentioned before on here like that we don't have air conditioning at our house.
You have.
So just figuring it all out right now.
Wow. Well, I wish you the best. And there's nothing worse than wearing multiple layers of clothing for a wedding and having it be oppressively hot.
I know. Of course, the dresses are... I'm in the wedding, and the dress is long, and it's navy blue, so it's dark colored.
Oh.
It's not a breathable fabric. So my father-in-law, he's visiting, and he's joked that I should just, you know, clip a fan to me or carry it around. I think the bride will really appreciate that, so.
Absolutely, yeah. Wow. Well, I hope it at least there's no rain, so to speak, on the for the wedding. Because that'd be real. A soggy mess is not good for a wedding.
No, it'll be beautiful no matter what.
That's right. So today we're talking about my post that came out this morning that's entitled The Other Side of Me. And I know that kind of is like, what? What's he writing about? So the whole quote is this. And I was driving to work one day last week, and I heard this quote. Where it's a question that really all of us should ask, what's it like to be on the other side of me? And I really think that that's a powerful question that all of us need to ask, because it's in, you know, certainly my focus is on leadership, but what is it like to be around me?
Mm-hmm.
And do we even think about it? And I think folks, not just great leaders, but people that people want to be around, are people that have a great self-awareness of what it is really like to be on the other side of them. And some would say, well, wait a minute, leadership is about accomplishing things. It's about getting things done. Well, one of the greatest leaders I think of what I'll consider my lifetime, you know, in industry would be Alan Mulally, who went from leading Boeing to really turning Ford around. Ford was a mess. He did a remarkable job of turning that company around. And I just want to remind our listeners, the only American auto manufacturer that did not need a government bailout in the late 2007-2008 timeframe. But Alan Mulally said this: leadership is never about you. It must be about them. Leadership is always about the people we're trying to lead.
Mm-hmm.
And so it matters what they think. It matters how they feel around us. So I was referencing one of my trainings in my writing here, not as a marketing ploy at all, but just because that's where the information came from, that there's four types of ways that we influence people, or that historically managers influenced people. And it was force. You know, they have no choice in the decision. Do it because I said so. I'm the boss. Do it. You know, when I want your opinion, I'll give it to you. Almost as that was the kind of the mentality. That was intimidation. Listen, you either do it or leave. And I remember once saying to someone, you know, that red carpet leads both ways in and out of this plant. And if you don't like it, take the carpet out, you know. And that's just, oof. I can't believe I said it, but I did.
Wow.
Manipulation, where there's winners and losers. We find ways to manipulate people to do what we want them to do. Or, and this one sounds somewhat okay or acceptable, but position. You know, you do it because people do it because they have to, because I'm the boss. Well, when we use those four ways to influence people, all we get is mediocrity. They have to do it. And they'll only do it when we're around.
Mm-hmm.
And so how does tie that back? So now I want to tie that back to what's it like to be on the other side of me. Well, the people that are around me, do they feel as though I'm forcing, intimidating, manipulating, or using my position to get them to do something? Because quite frankly, who would want to be around somebody like that? Nobody wants to be around somebody like that. Nobody wants to work for somebody like that. And as we're trying to figure out how to get better productivity from our teams, we have to realize that they have to want to do it. They have to really desire to be around us. And so then the transition then piece is, all right, so how can I influence people? And how can I get the best out of them? And really that's just by focusing on them. So the notes that I had sent you before our call was that great leaders look for, there's these three things that I think are really the key points. They look for teachable moments. So this is probably the part that you like the least, but maybe our listeners like the most, is when I spring questions on you that I didn't tell you I was going to tell you. So as a mom, how do you teach your kids? When I say the word teachable moments, what comes to mind?
Well, I think, you know, teaching by example.
Yep. I love that.
You know, it's funny when you were going through the four kind of negative ways to influence. That's exactly what I was thinking about. Was like, this is what not to do with your kids. Like, you can't, you know, trying to force them into doing things or, saying like, because I said so, that's not going to really teach them. So I think with my daughter, like, we have a lot of teachable moments with a 3-year-old. Yeah. And I try to explain things to her and give her the opportunity to, in like the agency, to make her own decisions and understand like what each decision might mean for her.
Sure.
And really explain like, this is why we do this, and this is why we do that, and this is why we don't jump from the fifth stair to the bottom. Like finding those opportunities to help her work through it, and then she can grow to make these decisions on her own without me having to, you know, bark at her at what she needs to do.
Yeah, that is perfect. And that's exactly what great leaders do. They, you know, and I'm not saying that our staff are a bunch of, you know, 3 or 4 year olds. but I am saying that what we do is we look for opportunities when we can take a situation and make it a learning experience, mm-hmm. a teachable moment. And oftentimes those teachable moments come at the time of a failure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, okay, this project didn't work. What can we learn from that? Mm-hmm. Not, what do you mean it didn't work? Where was your head?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what were you thinking? I mean, I think I had a boss say that to me once when I was an apprentice toolmaker. He's like, you know, what were you thinking when you did that? Not, so Dave, let's talk about how, you know, what were you thinking about that caused you to just make that decision to try to make the part that way? But he turned a mistake instead of a positive, which would have been a learning experience, into a negative. And you know, and now, how many years later, 38 years later, I still remember that. I remember it vividly. So great leaders that want to influence people take failures and they make them positive learning experiences. The next one here is that great leaders sense breakthrough opportunities. And I really like that one because it's, you know, maybe we're working with a person, we're coaching, mentoring them, developing them. And all of a sudden we see that they're at a point where this is where it's starting to click. They're getting it now. And if I just give them a little bit extra encouragement, something amazing is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a project I award them. You know, I say, hey, could you work on this? Or bring them, you know, one of the things when I talk about mentoring, letting them, you know, fly with us for a while. Bring them on board. Help them see what we're doing. I'm sensing that they're starting to get it. So now I want them to literally be closer to me so that they can understand the nuances, perhaps, of how I do something And then the next day, boom, they're able to do it themselves. So that's kind of what I think of as a breakthrough opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
The third one are catalyst times. So catalyst times are when I can bring others together with them to leverage a learning opportunity. Do I get different support? You know, I remember when I worked for Volpe and I was my title was production manager, and I had no models that I could follow. And I remember the parent company in Switzerland sending over the vice president of manufacturing to spend a few weeks with me. And then I went to Europe on two separate occasions to spend time with him, actually three separate occasions. And it was really neat because I think what happened was that my boss, the chief operating officer of the American plant, sensed that there were some catalyst times for me, that maybe I had grasped a lot, but if he could give me some extra help, plug me into some extra people, something amazing might come out of it. Now, I don't know if they were getting anything mm-hmm. amazing out of it, but at least for me, it was a great experience.
And that's a great opportunity too, to like be creative and to think
yes.
outside the box and how,
oh, clearly
like pairing different skill sets, you know, like a lot of us are broken into teams, but
yes.
some cross team functionality can really bring about these substantial changes and
exactly.
And it yeah, impacts. Yeah.
And you know, in this case, as you were talking about that, I was thinking one of my visits down to Orlando for my John Maxwell training, they broke some of us out into, and they actually brought in the Orlando Symphony Orchestra. And they wanted us to sit in the orchestra. And what they were trying to do was they were trying to show us that as leaders, our job is to really be the conductor, to bring in all the different, and the gentleman that kind of did the demonstration, you know, fortunately for me, it was kind of like a refresher because I had played in orchestras and in bands, so I knew the different instruments, but he showed what the sound was like, what the song would be like if we only had this instrument or that one.
Mm-hmm.
But when we brought it together, you're sitting in the middle of this symphonic performance. It was just amazing. And that's really what leaders do. And I like that how you said, you know, the skill sets, the diversity, bringing them together to make something really special. That's leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Conversely, we could just give everybody their orders and tell them to go do it. And we have the right to do it, but it's not going to get the best out of them. So I put some other notes here that I had sent you. When we talk about, you know, what helps us influence in a positive way, clearly integrity and trust. You know, influence is neither good nor bad. It is. You know, I've talked about the phrase, you know, or this, I've made the statement, Adolf Hitler was an amazing leader. He was just evil,
mm-hmm.
but he inspired people. So just because you're influential doesn't mean that's good. If we want to be a positive influence on people, we have to be people of integrity. We have to be people of trust. One of the questions we should ask ourselves is, are we nurturing their growth? Are we looking at each individual and saying, I want the best out of them? You know, as you look at your two daughters, you're judging them as individuals. And you're realizing that, you know, Lena can't do what Isla can do.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I give them exactly what they need? And I love this other point. Do I have faith in them? You know, people don't believe in people anymore. And a lot of people don't believe in themselves because they're comparing themselves to a world of make-believe that really doesn't exist. So do my people know that I really trust them, that I believe in them? And I heard this quote some years ago, assets make things possible, people make things happen. So am I giving people the tools? Am I listening to them? Do I seek to understand them? And I put a note here, are we both growing? And I think that one's key too, because if I'm not mm-hmm. growing as a leader, how can my team grow? How can I inspire people to grow if I'm not growing? Am I helping them navigate through their life? And so, and somebody would say, wait a minute, it's leadership. So shouldn't you just help them navigate around the company or navigate their career life? No, I want to be there for them to help navigate a path so that they can achieve what they desire out of life? What's their goal? I heard a story once about, and it actually was somebody that worked for my dad that kept wanting to grow and grow and grow. And my dad knew that if he gave the guy the final training, the guy might end up leaving. And sure enough, the guy did. And my dad just said, but you know, David, that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
You develop people, even if they may end up leaving. And it turned out that just before he retired, the guy applied for the job where my dad was working. I think I shared that story before.
Yeah, you have.
Helping make people connect, helping people make connections. That to me is another big thing for mm-hmm. us. Are we helping people? Are we connecting people to people they can't connect with themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Giving them access, so to speak, to, you know, to our contacts. I think that also helps us influence them in a positive way. So I want to talk too here about how can we know what it's like to be on the other side of us? I guess that's the question that I wanted to throw out to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think we've talked about before 360 degree evaluations or other anonymous feedback opportunities. I think it's probably one of the best and most efficient ways to do that. Because we can ask, sure. Like I could ask you, Dave, what's it like to be on the other side of me? And I suspect that you would tell me, you'd give me like good feedback, but mm-hmm. maybe you might hold back because you'd be afraid of hurting my feelings or, you know, damaging relationships. Sure. But these anonymous feedback opportunities, I mean, in my opinion, it would be the most efficient way to get the job done.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think so, you know, with our relationship, I think that I don't think I would hold back, but you and I've worked together for you know, quite a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a very trusting relationship. So I think I could say, you know, Marissa, sometimes I see this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that I'm not your direct report, which could complicate it. So like if I did report to you, if you were my boss, I might be a lot more careful.
Right.
To say it, even if we had a good relationship. And I think leaders need to know that.
Mm-hmm.
They need to know that just because they say they have an open door policy, no, people are not going to speak up. You know, and to simply say, well, that's their problem. No, that's your problem mm-hmm. if they don't speak up. So the 360s are great. And I think one of the things I've found that more and more I'm being asked to do them for organizations. And I do them as an interview type of thing,
mm-hmm.
but you can do very simple ones with just, you know, a simple questionnaire that's emailed out as a Word document, fill it out, print it out. And we've talked about that and give it back to me. The key though, when I get that feedback is I have to act on it.
Right.
I have to do something with the information that I've collected. I'm working with a new coaching client that is really doing amazing things and really turning around his leadership style. I mean, we're talking night and day, darkness to light set type of transition. And one of the things that was interesting is once he received the feedback, he didn't see himself at all as the way he was. He didn't know what it was like to be on the other side of him.
Mm-hmm.
And once he saw that feedback, it so profoundly changed his mind and his heart that he was sharing with me that he was someone from procurement came into his office and was talking with him. And at some point he tuned the guy out,
mm-hmm.
you know, and hey, I've done that. Right. If somebody is a very detail oriented person that wants to tell you a long story and you don't have time, you tone them out. But after the meeting was over with, it really troubled my client. And I said, what did you do? He says, well, he said, the next day I went into his office and I said, you know, I need to apologize to you. He said, when you came in yesterday and you started talking with me, he goes, I only caught about half what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm unfortunately, I'm sorry to say, I stopped listening. You know, could you forgive me and what it was it that you really wanted to tell me? That's the benefit of a 360.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just one of them. You know, if you read Marshall Goldsmith's book, he'll tell you, you go apologize to the people that you've been a jerk to. And I give the same advice, go apologize. What I'll typically do is I'll say, go thank the people that gave you the feedback.
Mm-hmm.
because they're perhaps saving your career.
Right.
And if we start looking at this feedback as perhaps these career-saving engagements or interactions, maybe we're going to take them a little bit more serious. And this is a question I haven't even thought through, but I'd love to know your opinion. So,
oh, great.
So teams.
Okay.
How do teams get feedback on themselves? I mean, can you do a 360 the same way with a team? Could you? So what are your thoughts? And clearly, I have no answer to this. I just thought of it. So I'm like, live on the edge, Dave, and throw it out there.
Why not? I mean, I'm sure you could. I'm thinking about our teams at MACNY. We have different teams.
Right.
You know, requesting feedback from the other teams or from individuals, figuring out,
sure.
Okay, is our team doing a good job communicating to the other teams? I don't see why you couldn't.
Yeah, so almost like as a team, what's it like to interact with us?
Yeah. And
okay.
I don't know if you'd get, I don't think you'd be as specific.
Right.
Because then you'd have to address the feedback as a team, which, you know, then there's kind of less ownership individually.
Sure.
And you'd want to avoid, I guess, like pointing fingers, you know, getting the feedback and saying, oh, well, you know, that's Dave there. That's, he did that and he's part of our team.
Yeah.
I think you'd want to avoid that, but.
Okay.
You probably could. I almost think a team, it might be useful to internally self-evaluate.
Okay.
And maybe that depending on the size of your team, some of that might be able to be anonymous, but.
Sure.
And then looking at, like, are we missing something or someone from our team? Or is one of the team members, you know, their role has changed. Maybe they're not the best fit for this team right now. Maybe it would be better filled by someone else in their skill set. That could also be effective, maybe.
Sure. Okay, that's good. You know, the other thing I was thinking of as you were sharing that was, you know, depending on the nature of our team, what's it, you know, are we easy as a team? In terms of systems, are we easy to work with?
Mm-hmm.
You know, are we hard to work with? Do people find it natural to interact with us?
Mm-hmm.
Is it easy to get information from us, or is that difficult? So I'm thinking that, you know, there could be some real power in this. So for instance, a sales team and an engineering team, you know, how could each evaluate the other one? Are we easy to work with? Do we give the information in a way that makes it easy for you to get what you need to get, type of thing? How do we respond to requests? I'm always thinking about, you know, customer service. So how easy is it to do business with me, so to speak? If it's hard, people aren't going to do it.
Right.
So I'm also looking at that now from an organization. So for instance, with MACNY, is it easy to register for our events? Is it easy to communicate with us? Is it easy to attend our trainings? I don't know. You know, that feedback we could only get from other people. And what I love is so many times I've heard, I don't love, but what I've found is so many leaders want all kinds of information except how they're doing.
Yeah.
And that's the sad part. And kind of the way I ended my post was I said, you know, I know it's pretty rough, but I had to ask myself some really tough questions. And when I reflected on my over 35 years in manufacturing, there was a long time where I was a jerk. And it came and went, but I was just a jerk. I wouldn't have wanted to work with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of ended it this way. The only thing worse than hearing the truth is not hearing it and remaining a jerk.
Right.
That's as plain and simple as it is. And you're not only risking the best of your team. Like, we know that if we're strong-arming our team, if we're one of those leaders that uses the four methods of influence, you know, the force, intimidation, manipulation, and position, we're only getting the bare minimum for them to keep their job. So we're losing the creativity of the team. But even worse than that, we might actually be putting ourselves in a position to have the best and the brightest leave.
Mm-hmm.
because I'm working with an organization that confessed to me that that's happening. Their HR person said to me, our best people are leaving because they don't need to stay and put up with this.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reality of what it's like when we don't ask the question, what's it like on the other side of me? So that's it. That was a happy one, huh?
So cheery.
But you know, the good news is that we may get people to say, hey, you know, this is awesome. I really mm-hmm. appreciate this about you. I really would like you to work on this. Mm-hmm. When I do my 360s, one of them is, what do you think this person's greatest strengths are? What areas would you like to see him improve?
Mm-hmm.
And every one of us has some place where we need to improve.
Yep.
And if we improve, we grow, we increase our value or the value of our organization. If we don't grow, you die and pretty soon you're obsolete. So I'm hoping that folks, you know, didn't take this as a negative, but really as a positive and encouragement. Hey, mm-hmm. this is an opportunity. Get mm-hmm. that anonymous feedback from people. Mm-hmm. What's it really like to be on the other side of me? So you got a wedding
yep.
to come that's going to happen between our next podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I'm just coming home. God willing, I'll be home by Saturday evening. And then remember, I got to put the boat engine together.
Yes.
So it's in the boat.
Okay.
And it was funny. My grandson, Max, came up to me. So Max is not quite three. He'll be three in, I think Max will be three in January, maybe. And so he says, Papa, engine sounding yet? So he's, little as he is, he knows that the engine's not making any noise yet.
Mm-hmm.
Soon. So by the next podcast, I'll be able to tell you, did the engine run or not? And I want to remind all of our Central New York listeners, Antique Boat Show, Skinny Atlas,
yep.
this coming Friday, Saturday, and Friday evening, Saturday all day, and Sunday till 3.
Yep, I have it in my calendar.
Super.
Yes.
I have no idea what we're going to talk about next week.
Well, I'm sure you'll think of it between now and then.
I will. So with that, I'm Dave Freund.
I'm Marissa Norcross.
And this was The Next Page.